Trend number four, the backlash against public employees. Ronald Reagan famously said, "Government is not a solution to our problem. Government is the problem." In 2008, the results of the presidential election suggested that the American public had rejected that view. However, over the past 18 months, a sea change has taken place, and the public's trust in anything having to do with government has nearly vanished. One of the clearest symptoms is an unprecedented decline in our regard for public sector employees as a group. Whether we're talking about local, state, or federal employees, they are now increasingly seen as destructive parasites, rather than dedicated public servants. The Trends editors believe this is a crucial tipping point in U.S. political history. Consider these developments. A July 7, 2010 Rasmussen survey of adults shows that only 19% would be willing to pay higher taxes to avoid layoffs of state employees. 69% said they would not be willing to pay more in taxes for this reason. The same poll indicated that Americans are slightly less opposed to paying higher taxes for education. 34% said they are willing to pay higher taxes to provide funding for public education, but 54% said they were not. 37% said they are willing to pay higher taxes to increase the number of police and firemen in their communities, but 52% said they would not be willing to do so. According to a May 4, 2010 Rasmussen survey, 36% of all adults believe public employee unions put a significant strain on the U.S. budget. But in states like California and New Jersey, where public employee unions are strongest, a majority of voters say public worker unions are a significant strain on their state budgets. And, according to a report in New Jersey's Star-Ledger newspaper, in internet postings and on talk radio shows, government workers are being called greedy and bloodsuckers. Commenting on the teachers' union, one writer called its members the worst human beings on the face of the planet. Criticizing the police, another wrote, "The typical criminal could never steal what these cops are walking out the front door with, in the form of pensions." As the Trends editors have explained in previous issues, the United States is locked in a race against demographic change. We have to raise per capita GDP by closing the skills and productivity gaps at a faster rate than the increases in healthcare and pension costs if we're to grow our standard of living in the 21st century. Fortunately, we still have the best universities, we're still a magnet for the best talent from around the world, and the private sector is relentlessly employing technology to steadily ratchet up productivity. As a result, U.S. companies produce more and more output with fewer and fewer labor hours. Unfortunately, the public sector cannot say the same thing. And as the Great Recession has driven states to the brink of bankruptcy and caused the federal government to incur trillion-dollar deficits, people are finally saying enough is enough. One of the most glaring areas of concern is public employee pension funds. As recently highlighted in the Wall Street Journal, pension plans for public employees are notorious for being overly generous and underfunded. The losses in the stock market since mid-2008 have made the underfunding problem worse. Illinois, for example, is in arrears to the tune of $83 billion, with no plan for ever catching up. Nationwide, public sector pension funds are lacking about $310 billion of the money they need to actually pay the pensioners what they've been promised. But that figure doesn't take into account how fund managers perform their actuarial services for public pension plans. They typically project the return on investment at unrealistically high levels and then discount any possible liabilities. So the real figure could be much higher than reported, and undoubtedly is. The private sector, in its accounting, has to use market valuation methods that take the real-world view that the returns you would like to see may not be the actual returns you get. When an economist at the University of Chicago applied those methods to public pensions, he found that they were underfunded by almost $2 trillion. That's about $87,000 for every pensioner in existence. And it's a number so far from the pension fund claims as to be criminal. If a corporation did that, it would find itself in big trouble. Worse for everyone else is that the mammoth deficits will have to be made up by taxpayers. Notably, however, the horrendous shortfalls in these public sector pension funds are as much a product of the fact that public employees are overpaid as they are the result of flawed accounting methods. And it's not just that the public employees are overpaid, but in many instances, an informal system is in operation that inflates pensions far beyond what would be consistent with an employee's earnings for most of the years of his regular work life. At many public government institutions, it is a written rule that the pension is based on an average of the employee's salary during the last 3 years of service. It is also an unwritten rule that a person who is planning to retire announces it 3 years early. His or her salary is then artificially inflated for the next 3 years to bulk up the pension. For example, the Chicago Tribune recently reported that the police chief of Chicago Ridge, a town of just 14,000 people, retired at the age of 44. Just before he retired, the town's pension board boosted his salary by more than $70,000 to $199,000. The deputy police chief, who sits on that same pension board, received an $83,000 raise to $188,000. As a result, the village's police pension fund will have to pay the two men $2 million over the next decade alone, even though it is only 41% funded. According to research conducted by the Heritage Center for Data Analysis, even without such shenanigans, federal employees make 30 to 40% more than private sector employees for identical jobs. Moreover, government workers are extremely difficult to fire even when they don't perform. The process to get an underperforming employee fired is so Byzantine that few supervisors have the time or stomach for it. And ironically, at the same time that unemployment hovers around 10%, the federal government has added 200,000 new workers since the beginning of the recession. Under the current scheme, those workers who are on hourly wages are earning 22% more than private sector workers in the same jobs. That means that the federal worker earns $28.64 an hour, while the private sector employee gets $18.27 for the same hour. Their health care and benefits, including pensions, are far better. Private employers pay, on average, $9,882 a year in benefits for each of their employees. The federal government pays $32,115 per worker, an astounding discrepancy. If Congress brought federal salaries in line with private salaries, taxpayers would save $47 billion in 2011 alone. As it stands now, Congress is overtaxing the entire nation in order to subsidize these privileged civil service employees and offer them job security that protects them from conventional market forces, such as recessions. The Cato Institute published a chart showing that the average federal civilian employee made $79,197 in 2008, while the same employee in the private sector made $49,935. The Atlantic Monthly responded by saying that federal employees are more highly skilled than those in the private sector and that they live in places where the cost of living is higher. But the Heritage Foundation research showed no difference in skill levels, and millions of private sector employees live in places like New York and San Francisco where the cost of living is very high. As the Cato Institute points out, the real reason for the discrepancy is that elected officials are trying to stay on the good side of federal employees and unions. Federal unions are particularly pernicious in that they don't have to compete. There is no way to measure their effectiveness, and their negotiations with their employer, the federal government, are lopsided, since the federal government simply taxes the population to pay whatever the union demands, and so it has no incentive to engage in tough negotiations. As pointed out in the Pelican Post, a political magazine in Louisiana, public sentiment against the greed of unions is on the rise. New Jersey Governor Christopher Christie implored voters to turn down budgets if the powerful teachers' union in that state didn't agree to a freeze on wages and benefits. The voters, faced with 541 budgets, rejected 58% of them, setting an all-time record, according to the New York Times. In New York, the governor is considering giving no raises to state employees, and Westchester County wants to cut salaries, lay off employees, and freeze pay for county workers. Connecticut may lay off some 2,000 teachers. The City Journal published an exposé in the spring of 2010 subtitled How Public Sector Unions Broke California. It detailed the strong-arm tactics used against politicians. California school teachers earn the highest salaries in the country. Prison guards make more than $100,000 a year. Employees of the state can retire at 55 with artificially inflated base pay. And all this is happening while the unemployment rate in that state is far higher than the rest of the nation, and corporations and citizens flee the high taxes and onerous regulations of California. In California, police and public safety officers can retire at age 50 and receive 90% of their final salary, which is often artificially inflated. Moreover, many of them retire even earlier on disability claims that are questionable at best. This has left the ordinary citizens of California facing a tax bill of about $36,000 for every household to shore up the $535 billion shortfall in public employee retirement benefits for workers who get to retire 15 years earlier than everyone else. That is just a glimpse of what the rest of the country will be facing in the not-too-distant future if changes aren't made. Not surprisingly, public sentiment has dramatically turned as rank-and-file Americans have become increasingly aware of the situation. In light of this trend, we offer the following three forecasts. First, public anger will continue to grow until taxpayers see definitive redress of their grievances. Politicians can no longer deny this or resist its force. Change is in the wind. Watch for people to cast their votes accordingly. Second, by 2015, government policy at all levels will be to outsource everything that can be reasonably outsourced to private firms and intensively automate most of what remains. With governors in California, New Jersey, Illinois, and elsewhere taking the first steps, and deficit hawks likely to capture Congress in November, it's likely that this will be a death blow to public sector unions, the only segment of organized labor that has not shrunk dramatically since the 70s. Very few jobs actually need to be performed by public sector employees. The public will demand that most government functions be performed by contractors subject to competitive bidding. Even law enforcement personnel could be paid and evaluated by a third-party private contractor, even though they might ultimately report to a politically appointed chief of police or elected sheriff who would manage the contract relationship. And third, in addition to the privatization of government jobs, expect to see privatization of government pension plans. Today, in the private sector, defined benefit pension plans are virtually extinct. Expect to see the same thing happen to public sector plans at the state, county, and municipal levels. These will become defined contribution plans similar to the 401k. Congress will also re-examine the federal employees' retirement program that parallels Social Security. The solution there is most likely to be tweaking the program to bring it more in line with private sector norms.